Fearless Fam, welcome to another episode where we shed light on topics most likely to keep in the dark. This is your host, Chubby, and today's level elephant is a level 5. Today's episode will be a triggering one. We're going to be discussing sexual assault and rape culture. If you would like to proceed with the episode, please continue. We have two special guests today who are a dynamic duo coming together to end rape culture. Every 68 Seconds is a nonprofit organization. Ryan, the photographer behind the beautiful image behind the Every 68 Seconds project, which focuses on sharing everyone's story, and Sam, the model, the entrepreneur, and so much more. They're both here today to share their story and how Every 68 Seconds project came about and how they got together and what inspired them to do this ongoing project. But before we start the show, you might be wondering, what is rape culture? All the information is by marshall.edu. What is rape culture? Rape culture is an environment in which rape is prevalent and in which sexual violence against women is normalized and excused in the media and popular culture. Rape culture is perpetuated through the use of misogynistic language, the objectification of women's bodies, and the glamorification of sexual violence, thereby creating a society that disregards women's rights and safety. Please know this also happens to men. It happens to everyone. Rape culture affects every person. The rape of one person is a degradation, terror, and limitation to all people. Most women and girls limit their behaviors because of the existence of rape. Most women and girls live in fear of rape. Men in general do not. That's how rape functions as a powerful means by which the whole female population is held in a subordinate position to the whole male population, even though many men don't rape and many women are never victims of rape. This cycle of rape is the legacy of rape culture. Here are some examples of rape culture. Blaming the victim, she asked for it. Trivializing sexual assault, boys will be boys. Sexually explicit jokes, tolerance of sexual harassment, inflating false rape report statistics, publicly scrutinizing a victim's stress, mental states, motive, and history, gratuitous gendered violence in movies and television, defining manhood as dominant and sexually aggressive, defining womanhood as submissive and sexually passive. Pressure on men to score. Pressure on women to not appear cold. Assuming only promiscuous women get raped. Assuming that men don't get raped or that only weak men get raped. Refusing to take rape accusations seriously. Teaching women to avoid getting raped instead of teaching men not to rape. So these are some of the things that we will be discussing further in the episode, and things that I felt like, you know, I needed to share what rape culture is, because most people might not be familiar with that term, which rape culture is a term that was coined by feminists in the United States in the late 1970s. It was designed to show the ways in which society blamed victims of sexual assault and normalized sexual violence. Many feminists have provided great definitions of what rape culture is and how it plays out every day, which are some of the examples that I gave you today. But now to welcome Sam and Brian to the show. Hello, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm well. It's nice to meet you both. Thank you so much for joining this episode. I was talking to everyone, letting them know who you both were, but I would like for you to share a little bit about yourselves and how this amazing project got started, you know, Every 68 Seconds, what it means, and how you are, you know, doing it out there in the world. So
sure.
Whoever wants to start, so by me.
Sure, I'll get us started. So I used to be a professional photographer. I used to do weddings and families and those kind of things. And when I moved down here to Jacksonville from Ohio, I went to work for somebody else. I didn't want to open another studio and continue that. So I didn't do photography. I actually went back to school and got a degree in programming development. So I kind of put photography on the side. When COVID started, just before COVID actually hit in 2019, I started picking up photography again as a hobby. Just on the side, I wasn't looking to supplement income or anything like that, just for something to do for myself. And on Instagram, I came across Samantha. Samantha had done some modeling here locally in Jacksonville. That's what I was looking for, the type of photography that I was looking for. And so I reached out to her, hey, do you want to work together? She said, sure. And so we met and we started working together. At just around the same time, so this was 2 years ago, at just around the same time, she was exhibiting some art pieces in a local art exhibition. That exhibition is called Surviving to Thriving, and it's put on by the Women's Center of Jacksonville. The Women's Center of Jacksonville is the certified rape crisis center here. They provide rape crisis counseling as well as other supporting services for women in this area. So she invited me out to the show. I went and looked at her show, was impressed. And she can tell you a little bit more about her pieces, but suffice it to say, we started a conversation about sexual assault and her experiences in the past. And this was not a unique thing. Once I started talking to women, as you know, not only my daughter and girlfriends and ex-wives, but just other models that I had spoken to, this was a recurring theme where they all had these experiences with sexual assault as they grew up. If it wasn't assault directly, you know, it was harassment. I had my own experience in high school with a teacher and his husband. And so I had my own history, and I hadn't really talked about it, hadn't really been open or public about it, but it's something that touched me. And I had had this idea for a couple of years, just kind of in the back of my head, about doing something to basically just raise awareness about sexual assault, because as common as this was, nobody was talking about it, right? It's a very taboo subject and not the kind of thing that people talked about, especially as I was growing up. I'm a few years older than Samantha. And so, especially when I was growing up, like, it was never talked about. So I approached Samantha once I saw her passion for the subject and said, you know, I kind of have this idea. Would you like to join me? And she said, sure. She jumped on board right away. And that's kind of how we met and how we started. And so 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago now, in September of 2020, right? Was the first.
It was after COVID.
In 2021, I guess.
Yeah, it was September of 2021.
We started doing our first photographs, and it just kind of grew from there. So I'll let you kind of give your background and supplement that however you like.
Yeah, so I also have had my own experiences with sexual violence. And, you know, it started in high school, and there are, like, earlier instances in my life, even, like, middle school and like elementary, where, you know, like, kind of touching on like catcalling and the objectification of our bodies and, you know, different things like that. And so it was always something that I kind of struggled with in terms of like being confident in myself and like the love I accepted for myself and would like think, you know, that's all I deserve kind of thing. And it was something that I struggled with moving through college. So senior year of my high school was my first like sexual assault. And then by the time I got to college, fall semester, freshman year, so only like a short while after, I had, lack of a better term, a rape. It's kind of like one of those gray area things where it's, you know, the sexual assault is a rape kind of thing. And I even still struggle to identify certain situations that I've been in, although I know it's very much so one of those things, you know. I start building up this like freaking list of experiences, and some of them are, you know, situations that, you know, I might have had control over or I might not have. And either way, I navigate through college and, you know, I'm kind of just like racking up these tallies. And I transfer a few times. I started in Jacksonville, Florida. So I left and then came back only a few years later. And so in 2017, I'm back in Jacksonville. And through all of my experiences, the most easiest one identified as rape, you know, the rape that I most often talk about, occurs. And shortly after that, I deal with like 3-4 months of harassment from the same person. I never reported, so nothing ever really got done, and I just kind of handled it on my own. In the same time, I am a female security at one of the beach bars, at Surfer the Bar in Jacksonville, Florida. I, you know, confide in people I work with as female security. It's my job to also protect people inside of our bar from incidences like this, or things, you know, that fall under the bracket of rape culture. So being drugged, being touchy, you know, in the bar, stuff like that. As that is my, you know, job at the time, the manager I had, who also knew of the rape that I had, you know, a few months prior, adds himself to my list and also sexually harasses me while on the job. And so I'm kind of just like going through the wave of all of these things. I find myself in a relationship that lasts about 2.5 years. And, you know, the breakdown of that was a lot of, things that I thought were okay, again, deeming on this low level of respect I thought I was deserving in terms of the relationships and the friendships and the things that I kept in my life. So by the end of this 2-year, you know, relationship that had started while we all worked out at the bars together, you know, I find him also on my list now of things that never really sat right with me. And now it's like, okay, let's call these things what they are. And it was sexual assault. There was sexual violence, you know? And so growing to call it what it is, as I'm moving through the last 2 years of my college experience, post-grad, I meet professors that really push me in my art as a painter to use my art as like a form of therapy and really start to conceptualize some of my pieces. And while I'm having, you know, the rape and the harassment and the boss and, you know, the relationship and all of these things that are just like cultivating in my life, I'm also going to class and having these professors say, you know, put it on paper. Art doesn't have to be beautiful. Tell your story. Like, it can be ugly. It's allowed to be your truth. And I'm like torn in between, you know, the person I feel like that I am today in terms of like, I have these boundaries, you know, I know where I stand and what I deserve and who I was before, where I doubted so much of myself and I had so much shame and guilt. So I let that affect other parts of my life. You know, I get through this like tug of war of myself. I'm out of the relationship. I'm out of the bar scene. I'm finding healthier relationships. And this lines me up to the exhibition where I show some of my art pieces in Surviving to Thriving. And I have, I think it was 4 fairly large black and white paintings of loose like figure drawings. And they all, you know, have hands up in the air. They're holding hands. And it's just this uplifting, empowering piece of survivors and people that have just gone through some stuff, you know? I submitted it. I invite Brian. I have a few other people there in support and everything. And he sits me down after, you know, we have our moment. We really kind of come together and bond over unfortunate experiences that have happened to us. Again, we find so many, you know, parallel things that happen from one to the next, to things that we have felt before and after our experiences, to things that we, you know, wish we would have said, and we can relate on all of these things. And we kind of just looked at each other and we're like, at this point with who we are in this exact moment when we were sitting there, I think we were like at a coffee shop or something having this conversation. It was like, it almost felt wrong of us to not go forth and do something. And so our first step was doing the Survivor series, taking the portraits of survivors with quotes that stuck with them from their experience, whether it was before, during, after, from the perpetrator, from somebody you thought was going to be supportive or was supportive, you know, whatever quote kind of was identifiable for you and your experience, we chose to write them on the survivors' bodies in our Survivor series. And we build a beautiful collection of almost 40 survivors. And the following year in Surviving to Thriving, we are then able to have our debut. So we really kind of were able to sit on this thought as like people who have worked so hard to heal on our own, and we cultivate this idea, and then almost an exact year later we're able to do our debut of the Every 68 Seconds project. And now almost another year out, we're really just trying to figure out new ways to navigate so that we can continue the work and continue to be a platform for people, you know, that were feeling what we felt 5 years ago or feeling what we felt 20 years ago and stuff like that. And so it's our way to help you guys find your voice, and we want to be able to be a platform where you can embody these experiences in a way that isn't like, it's not taking over you, it's not who you are, and just to kind of give that back to them through this work.
That was
the whole nutshell, start to finish, yeah, for me, and then with the project.
No, it was beautiful. I just wanted to give you guys your space to talk and to just, you know, I didn't want to interrupt because I don't feel like it's my place to, like, I want to hear your story. I want everybody to hear your story. But I do have a couple of questions. You know, how did, first, how did the name Every 68 Seconds come about? Like, how did that was like, let me, that's the name. Like,
so back in 2019, the Department of Justice does a survey of crime statistics like every so often. It's not every year, but it's every like couple of years. And for 2019, I believe it was, the statistic was, there is every 68 seconds an American is sexually assaulted. So that includes sexual assault, rape, those kind of things. It does not include like just sexual harassment. That would drive the number up even farther. But these are people that actually experienced it. You probably know, or if you don't, very few sexual assaults are reported. Even fewer are prosecuted. The most recent statistic is less than 2%. And I think only about 2% of that 2% actually see any kind of time behind bars. So it's a very small number. It's one of the most unreported crimes that occurs. And if you think about that, that's basically one a minute, right? A little bit more than one a minute. And so we just thought it was an incredible number of people being affected by this traumatic experience, and yet nobody was talking about it. Probably in the last 5 years, there's been more focus on it with the Me Too movement and Harvey Weinstein and who's the guy, the billionaire that hung himself. Anyway,
right, him. Yeah,
right. So there's been more speaking of it and more conversation, but it's still not the kind of thing that people want to talk about. And it's obviously a very uncomfortable conversation to start, but we think it's an important one. And we think that the only way to start tackling it is to start talking about it. And so that's kind of where the name comes from.
I totally agree with you. About 2 years ago, I was going to do the episode about rape culture, because that's what it technically is, you know. Mm-hmm. And ironically, even though my podcast is about talking about uncomfortable topics and shedding light on things that I deem very important, I shied away from it. I stayed away, and I was like, because it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. How am I gonna do it? How I'm going to present this to everyone, you know? And I was doing some research, and that's how I found your page. The instant I saw every 68 seconds, I was like, wow. I already knew, obviously, because of the research I've done. And I was like, I need, and I just sat on it. And I'm like, that's when I decided, let me send a message. And I need to get to know you both, and how, obviously, I didn't know it was two people until now, but I needed to know about how this is going in the world. Because like you said, Brian, we do need to talk about it, you know? And going back to what your story, what actually prompted you to share your story, either publicly or through however you decided to do so?
My story?
Yes.
So, again, mine happened in high school. So
right.
I was 15 at the time, and there was a lot of grooming involved.
Right.
A male teacher, obviously. My whole sophomore year was pretty much just grooming, getting my confidence and trust and those kind of things. And then at the end of my sophomore year is when the incident actually happened, right? And I was obviously mortified. One of the common things that sexual assault survivors share is the feelings of guilt, shame. What else could I have done to avoid it? Was it my fault? Did I send the wrong signals? All of those kind of things. And so I didn't talk about it to anybody. I didn't disclose to anyone for a long, long time. I finally, like more than 20 years later, I talked to my ex-wife about it just briefly. It was not a conversation she wanted to have. It was obviously uncomfortable. And then while I was in counseling, I disclosed to my psychiatrist, who is also a male. And my psychiatrist's immediate response was, well, you must have wanted it, which was devastating for me, because it was difficult to get myself to the point where I was willing to disclose to him, to feel that vulnerable and open about it. And I was immediately just like blamed basically for the incident. And a lot of survivors experience that, and that's why they don't want to come forward and say anything. So, so that shut me up for another like 10 years probably. And really it was meeting Samantha, seeing how open she was about her experience, the conversations that we had, the realization that our shame didn't actually belong to us. It should be the perpetrator is the one that owns the shame. And our silence only serves them. It does nothing for us, does nothing to help us heal, does nothing to counter this rape culture that exists in the country. All it does is protect them. And so it really, if I had to put one thing, it would be Samantha. I mean, she kind of gave me the courage to say, yeah, I can face this, you know, I can deal with it. So that's kind of how my story comes out.
Well, we're here for you. And
appreciate that.
That's horrendous, first of all, to go to someone to not seek help, but to want to talk about what's going on. And that's the first thing they said. First of all,
a trained professional like that.
That breaks my heart.
Really unbelievable.
Yeah, that breaks my heart. I want to ask you both about your mental health through going through this. And actually, obviously, we have to, every time we talk about it, I know it's like very, not re-traumatizing, but to some can be. And I know it's very hard. But how is your mental health, obviously, then versus now? Like, how are you both doing with it? I know it's tough. I know.
It's actually funny that you asked that, because I was thinking about it today for a totally unrelated reason. I would have to say it is like complete day and night difference. And I think that's kind of what I meant in terms of how like the role I played in some of the situations that I did, you know, experience. They weren't things that were in my control. Like, I didn't go out and seek out these things to happen to me. However, you know, the first one happens, and then, you know, the second experience happens, and your mental health does deteriorate. After a while, it's so easy to believe that either this is, you know, the love I'm supposed to be getting. This is how love feels. This is how sex feels. This is what's supposed to be right. This is what foreplay is. This is what not foreplay is. You know, and you learn through experience. And, you know, some people, you know, can get told, you know, don't touch the oven, and they will never touch the oven. And that's fine. That's how they'll learn. And they're, you know, that's, I wish I learned that way sometimes. But a lot of us aren't that way, you know, like, just because you say, you know, something could happen if you go out to the bar, doesn't mean that, like, we're going to live inside of our houses forever. So, you know, as I build this, you know, collection of small, minor, large, you know, life-affecting experiences, my mental health was, like, on this crazy roller coaster. Sometimes I would feel so, like, I know exactly what I'm doing. Like, I'm in control of this. I'm making the decisions. I'm going out. I'm playing the game. You know, I'm running the night, whatever it is, you know, and I felt that idea of empowerment, you know. And then as soon as, you know, whatever it was would switch up again, a couple months, you know, the moods, whatever it was, I would still just be stuck there sitting there with no power at all, feeling so alone, feeling so shamed, feeling like the reason that my life is bad is because of these things happening to me. And then, you know, I grew up in a somewhat religious household. And so that plays into your idea of, you know, what is good and what is bad, and the things that you allow to happen to yourself. Okay, well, yeah, that I did play a role in that. So, like, I'm the sinner too, type thing. And so all of these things start circulating, and I definitely fell into many, you know, addictions and codependencies. And that was what that 2-year relationship was, or 2.5-year relationship was, that fizzled out. And, you know, when I finally came out of it, and I really looked at everything for what it was, like, it wasn't healthy. None of it was good. I wasn't good for him. He wasn't good for me. Our friends weren't good for each other. The nightlife, the entertainment, the socializing, none of it was good. And yet I would have given up everything 2 years ago to be exactly where I was, because it was exactly what I thought I deserved and wanted and, like, needed. You know, I allowed myself to feed it back into myself. I continued to, like, continue the cycle. And a lot of that plays into the addiction that I ended up struggling with. Most of my time here in Jacksonville, I have not been a sober person. And many people look at me, and I, you know, I've held jobs working with kids. I work at gyms. I work in, you know, positions in, you know, life where they're like, no, she's got it together. She's healthy. She's good. She, you know, and I was so, so good at all of it, and so stuck in the cycle, and had gotten so well at balancing the act. I was a full-blown functioning, you know, alcoholic and addict, and I had it down to a T. I was getting up for 5 a.m. shifts and not, you know, blinking an eye. I was, you know, taking 5-6 classes and staying on the dean's list and working 3-4 jobs and not sleeping. But it's like, you need a lot of freaking uppers to do that stuff. So, no, my mental health wasn't there. It was completely gone. It was shattered, if anything. And there took a lot of, like, small moments of grasping at anything that seemed healthy, anything that seemed like there was light to it. You know, like, I fell into yoga so hard. I was like, I'm going to be a yogi. And it wasn't the yoga that I loved. It was the time by myself. You know, I was scared to death to be left alone by myself. And then I found something where it was okay to do that. You know, it's okay to cry on your mat. People are doing it for way different reasons. You don't need to tell them your reasons. Go do it. You know, sit with yourself. You know, the painting became therapy. Professors started saying it's okay to not want to paint palm trees. Thank the Lord, I don't want to paint a pretty sunset anymore, you know? And so I started getting these tiny permission slips from people that didn't owe them to me in life, that I was like, you know, I was stuck living a life of circumstances and like issues based on other people's decisions. You know, like, I'm dealing with the shame and you did this to me. And that was my whole life. I'm dealing with this outcome and it's your fault. And that's how I kind of struggled with all of these things. And then people that didn't owe it to me were telling me like, it's okay. You're fine. You're gonna get through it. Here's your permission slip. Say fuck them. Sorry if I can't say that. You know, say all these things, you know, like tell them no. Get away from them. You don't have to go and socialize with that person. You don't have to entertain this friendship. You don't have to keep this job. You don't have to do the things that are perpetrating this negative cycle in your life. And as I started to believe that, you know, it was so much easier to walk away from people I thought I loved, from people that I thought I needed, from friendships I literally would cry over thinking like, I'm going to lose this person. And since having the nonprofit, not a single one of those people that I was so worried about has reached out to me.
Exactly.
You know, I'm a year sober. Not a single one of you have reached out to me. And so it's like, I don't need that. And that's another permission slip that you've given me. Like, I know my power now. I know who I have in my life. I know the people in my corner. And I don't know why I need to learn it so physically in my life to finally get the outcome, you know, and learn the lesson, but I do. And that was like my mental health. It was one terrible roller coaster ride, and someone finally got me off and put me on like the merry-go-round, and we're good here, you know?
Yeah. Well, congrats on the 1 year. It's beautiful. Every little step, it's beautiful to get you to your higher being. Well, Brian, if you want to touch upon your mental health.
My mental health's been a mess for a while. I don't know that it's, I mean, your mental health is kind of weird in that, you know, it is the sum of your entire life, right? I can't separate, you know, this one incident and say that's the reason that I'm depressed. I've suffered from depression. My first major episode of depression, where I was looking for reasons to stay alive, right? I didn't want to be here anymore. Was in my early 20s, I think at the age of 21. And pretty much, except for maybe a few months, I've been on some type of antidepressant ever since then. I've tried to come off of them, and usually more than one. I've tried to come off of them, it never goes well. And so after about the third cycle of like trying to feel like I was stronger and didn't need the medication, I have just succumbed. And that's what I need to survive and to live my life on a daily basis. And so I just accept that. I work with obviously a different psychiatrist than the one previously, and a therapist. And it keeps it under control. Anybody out there listening that is unsure, that struggles with depression, don't be afraid of the medicine game. I know Big Pharma is making money, but I have to survive. And so if that's what I need to do it, then that's what I do.
No, some medicine works for some people and some don't. You just got to find the right one for you.
Definitely.
You know, there are some holistic ways that's the route the person wants to go to, but there's so many multiple ways for a person to, you know, better their mental health, like, you know, painting, dancing, yoga, running, anything, right. You know, and it's beautiful. Every process for you to get for you to feel like you and like for you, Brian, like to function, to be feeling like you're healthy, feeling like you can survive. But I'm happy you're here and having this conversation and sharing it with everybody, because we do need to speak up about the stigmas or like this doesn't happen often to men. We all have to talk about it. You know, we need to bring it up and we need to share with everyone. So again, thank you both for being here and sharing. And this Every 68 Seconds Project is a beautiful thing. And your images and the way you guys are both come together and put it and display it for us to see is beautiful. I was mesmerized by the messages are obviously like triggering, but we need to see them, because there are horrendous things that are being said to a person, a human being, you know?
Right.
And I want to touch upon how being in a relationship does not warrant any sexual activities. And we're not taught that. You know, I'm going back to what Sam said, you know, being in a relationship. There's a bunch of things that we are not taught in schools, or even our parents, because obviously they didn't know, you know.
Right.
How do you think every 68 seconds is helping or promoting the boundaries, you know, on what we can say, you know? How do you feel about the word no? Things like that. Like, right. How do you think?
So, our first year in existence, we're a little bit more than that now. Our first year in existence, our primary goal, our focus was this art show and telling people's stories. We completed that in April, and you know, one of the things that Sam and I have done a couple of times since then is like sit down and make a conscious decision that, is this something we want to continue, or was this like a one-time thing that, you know, now we're done, we can move on with our lives. And we both feel very passionately that we want to continue the process. And so we want to continue to tell people's stories, but in addition to that, we want to, we want there to be a level of education. So many people that we talk to, say things to us like, well, if that's rape, then I've been raped several times. And that's exactly our point. You have control of your body, regardless of what age you are, regardless of your gender, whatever kind of relationship you're in or not in, your body autonomy is your own. And you have the right to say, no, I'm not doing that. And it doesn't matter what you did yesterday or a year ago or last night. You can have an open sexual relationship one day and the next day decide that that's not for you, and you can say no. So relationship status doesn't matter. What you've done before doesn't matter. How much somebody spent on you doesn't matter. All that matters is your consent. And if you haven't consented, that's assault if they touch you. And if there's any kind of penetration, that's rape. One of the things that comes up is, why do you use the term sexual assault? You know, people are very sensitive about the words. They're like, why don't you call it what it is? Well, we try really hard to call it what it is. Some things are sexual assault. Some things are sexual violence. Some things are rape. And when there are those, when they meet the definitions, we try and call them what they are. But I'm getting off topic. Anyway, whatever you want to add in relationships.
So, being in a relationship that now I can truly see as like none of it was good, none of it was healthy, and being out of also, you know, the partying and the addictions and like sober-mindedly looking at this. How do you try to cultivate a healthy relationship? Like, I feel like there has to be like a level of like raw honesty from the get-go. You know, if all we're doing is hooking up, like hookup buddies, establish it right now, a respect on mutual levels. And if it's more than that, okay, reassess right now in this moment, you know, and things like that, because the labels of relationships nowadays is impossible to keep up with. Oh, we hooked up, we didn't hook up, we kissed, he's my boyfriend. I don't know. I don't care what the heck you guys call each other. First of all, figure that out. You know, stop getting your feelings hurt from people that are not on the same page as you. And then secondly, in the moments of actual, you know, physical touch, relationship, you know, romance, all of this stuff, that is when it matters. I don't care if we hooked up at 8 a.m. this morning, we left for intermission and came back at noon. I could change my mind. I could maybe catch a cramp. I could simply not want to kiss you right now. You know, reassess right now. My partner that I'm with now asks every single time before she even lays a hand on me. And it's almost to a point where I'm like, hello. You don't have to be so, you know, worried. You're not going to break me, you know, kind of thing. Because it's like, even the small moments that I'm not used to having somebody like, hey, is this okay? Like, oh, you know, I'm just touching your leg sitting at dinner. Are you okay with that? Yes. And I'm okay with you double checking and triple checking. You know, if I have to ask 3-4 times if it's okay to swing by and grab something from your house, you better damn sure make sure you triple check before you touch any part of my body. I think we have these crazy realistic, you know, these crazy unrealistic expectations around sex and things that go around it. You know, you have to figure out what your partner likes and what they don't like and what they tolerate and what they will never say yes to and what they will always say yes to and what they are excited about and what are just straight downright no's. You know, and maybe you want to learn all of that, but it's a first night, you know, okay, well, you need to slow down. You need to make sure you're on the same page. You know, I don't care how well the dinner date went. I don't care how great your first 2 years of marriage is. Exactly. You need to be on the same page in that actual real lifetime moment, you know, like, because even on your 40-minute drive home, something could change. I don't care if we talked on the phone and now you're arriving. Double check. It's so nice to ask for consent. And it's crazy to think that that's something that's like, oh, like I might be, you know, thought of to be weird if I ask her for consent. No, you will be praised. I promise you, you are a keeper. And it's like, that's crazy. That's crazy that it's so far and few between, you know, but it's like, yes, you have to ask me consent to come and pick me up at my house. You have to ask me to consent if I want to go on this date with you. You probably will ask me permission to open the door and do all of these other sweet little things, you know? So keep asking permission. Keep giving yourself the brownie points because people want you to ask if they care. They want you to know that you're thinking of their respect. You want to know that they're on the same page too, you know?
I was going to say, and to touch upon that, I also feel like it's in every relationship, friendships, family, yes. Consent matters.
Yeah, absolutely. I work with kids and I have worked with them pretty much like as full time as I could have gotten for the last like 5-ish years. And the amount of times I've had to tell little boys to come up to me, do not touch me. Why are you touching me? You're not a little baby who needs me to physically pick you up. You are 7, you're 8, you're 9 and 12. Do not touch me. I don't care if I'm your teacher and I'm the only adult in here. Get your hands off me.
Right.
Like kind of thing. And some of them, it's like, I'm so entitled to you. I'm so entitled to this space. And I worked with kids in a public area. I worked at part-time at Bailey's Gym. I had my manager sit down and ask me why I thought we had so many issues with the kids in our playroom. And yet I have had so many issues of sexual harassment from people and parents that are patrons at the gym who are raising the kids. Where are the kids learning it from? While the dad's hitting on me in front of the mom in the play, like, you know, it's shown to them. It is taught to them. And if you can teach your daughters to close their legs a little tighter or to scream and blow their rape whistles a little louder, then I'm sorry, you can teach your sons and daughters a little bit of self-respect and respect to others and a whole lot of accountability. Like it's, you know, it comes down to the level of you absorb what you're exposed to. And then you turn old enough to decide what the hell is right or wrong. And people know what it is. And then they choose not to do things or they choose to do things, you know?
Totally agree with you. I've always preached that it starts at home. It starts at home. And from there, it's where you're, you know, sending these kids out to the world. And like you just said, they're going to mimic what they see and they're going to probably say things that they hear. And it's like, where is it coming from? Obviously mm-hmm. It starts at home. It's crazy that the word consent is so like foreign to some people. It's like, it's not even about just touching your body or can I go pick you up? It's literally about, would it be okay if I sit next to you? Would it be mm-hmm. okay if I text you a certain time? So would it be okay if I call you? I don't like hugs. So I don't like people hugging me unless I want to go hug you. I'm like, would it be okay for me to hug you? You know, little things like that. And it's like, people don't understand. They think that it's like about them. And it's like, no, it's not about you. It's just that I just personally don't like that human interaction of that, you know, connection, vibrational thing being passed on to me. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that. They think it's all about them. And it just gets... That line just gets like mushy, like, you know, like what can you do, you know? Yeah. Do you have any projects or any future things coming up for you both? Like anything you want to share?
So right now we're looking, we've kind of taken a little bit of a hiatus after April's show. We've both been busy this past summer and now into the fall. Next month, we're trying to plan another group session. And when I say group, basically we rent a studio for the day and then we do portraits in 20-minute intervals. So they come in individually, but we just do a bunch of them on the same day. So we have that planned. If people are interested, they can reach out to us. Again, we're in Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know the reach of your audience. For people that aren't directly in the area, or even the people that are but maybe aren't interested in being on camera, we're also right now accepting people's stories. That's your personal story and your experience and whatever that means. One of the things that we want to try and do is empower survivors. We like to use the term survivor. Some people use victim. Some people use thriver, warrior, whatever, however you see yourself. But tell your story if you're so inclined to do that in a place where you can do that safely. Obviously, we know that not everyone is and can do it safely. And those of us that can, by telling our stories, we're helping those people that can't, that don't feel safe. Sharing their story, just letting them know they're not alone. They don't need to feel shame. The blame is not theirs to own, and they don't need to own that. So those are our focuses right now. We're working on putting together the portraits from the first year and a half, as well as the stories that we received into a publication, a print publication, kind of like a magazine. And putting that out, so we hope to be able to finish that and launch it by the end of the year, or if not by New Year's, then right after the beginning of the year. So we're excited about that, and we haven't really discussed it, but I think we both plan on exhibiting again in April, and we're looking for new participants. We want to grow the number of participants. We're at like close to 50 now with the people we've added since the first show, and we just want to keep growing. And telling people's stories. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, but also, you know, trying to, navigate more into being an educational platform as well. We've kind of had loose conversations about, entertaining workshops or some seminars and things like that and what they would look like for us. So I don't really want to speak too much just because a lot of it is still kind of up in the air. And, you know, we definitely have a lot to figure out for that. But I think that would definitely be something to come out of 2023 moving forward into, you know, kind of get onto campuses and get into, in front of larger audiences just in general in terms of that small aspect. But always continuing the work of participants and, you know, people willing to submit their testimonies.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I don't think I've heard about any like what you guys are doing here in Florida. So that I think it's great, especially if you targeting the schools where it's obviously needs to start, because we get education there, right? And we're not being taught about the actual outside world, the real life. So I think that will be
impactful. Yeah, they're being taught chemistry, but they can't navigate a relationship with another human being.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's the world we live in is just so crazy to me sometimes. Can they find you at, is this correct, at the IG every 68 seconds? Oh, I spelled it wrong. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's at every 68 seconds project. I'm finishing up the website now. We hope to be able to launch that within a couple of weeks. That's going to be every 68 seconds project.org. You can reach us on our email.
We have our, I'm pretty sure the link tree is in my profile, his profile, and the project profile. So the link is up there. And then that link, it has everything that we're, you know, building platforms on as well. So Instagram is definitely like our number one home base, and then our email. But if you grab that link in the project bio, you'll be able to grab everything else as well. So we have merch up. We got some hoodies and t-shirts and little things like that. And just extra platforms that we're eventually going to be sharing, you know, the project across.
Yeah, I saw. Do you guys have the shirt on right now? Because I saw the website.
We do. Underneath Culture. So this is this is the one we started with, the shirt we started with. We have a couple of new ones that we just posted, and we're working on some other designs. We're selling on the Bonfire platform right now. There's a bunch of them out there, but basically we get a small percentage of any sales from that, just to try and help support the project. So far it's come out of our pockets, and so that's kind of challenging. In order to reach more people, we're looking for small donations, $5 or $10 even, would be a ton of help. Or if you like the merchandise, grab that. We have some stickers. If you reach out to us, we'll send them stickers too.
And any little bit helps, trust me. Self-funded organizations like what we're both doing, I trust me, I get it, it's hard. But anyone watching this episode, please support them. They're doing an amazing thing that I feel like if I had this 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it would have been amazing to understand the difference between sexual harassment, rape, and sexual violence, and what you're entitled to, autonomy, all the things that encompasses what we're talking about. And they are trying to end rape culture. They're trying to end this every 68 seconds. I hope the numbers, gets smaller, I guess, because it's the 66 seconds.
No, we want it to be bigger. We want it to grow.
Right.
More frequent. But yeah, right. The most important thing is that you understand what that means as far as the number of people that are affected. Right. If you've been affected, it's certainly not, you're not alone. We have links to resources locally. We can give you resources nationally. If you've been affected and you don't feel like you've gotten the support, or you haven't ever told anyone about your story, you don't have to come publicly and tell it to us, but we can put you in touch with some people, national organizations that can provide you with support and counseling. It's usually free. If it's not free, it's very low cost. Most of them are supported by donations and public grants and things like that. So people don't have to feel alone. We've started reaching people in foreign countries. I just wanted to mention that briefly. We have a story of a young lady in Australia that just submitted her story. I talked to another girl who just submitted her story from Scotland. So the word's getting out there, and we just want to keep growing that and let people know they're not alone and that we can help support them.
Well, before I forget, I will get your link and I will put it on the description so everybody could get it. But if you're watching this, reach out to them. If you just want to share your story briefly, it's fine. Just do it.
You can share your story anonymously as well. I don't think we mentioned that. You want people to know your story. You want the cathartic experience of telling it, but either you're not safe or you're embarrassed or whatever. You can tell it anonymously. We'll put no name with it. We'll put a pseudonym with it. People don't have to be able to identify you if that's more comfortable. We offer that to everyone, and thankfully most people are willing to put their name to it and not feel ashamed and feel safe. But if you want to share it anonymously as the first step, we welcome that as well.
That's wonderful. And I think that's beautiful to still be able to provide a safe platform to still be like, hey, you can still share it and no worries. You're still going to be safe or protected in a way. But before I let you both go, I do have a final question. Sure. And it is, what do you think will make a lasting change?
Talking about it.
Talking.
I feel like, because I mean, it even kind of popped into my brain when you were in the very beginning talking about, you know, how you came to want to do this work. And I think, yeah, people talk about it, but we talk about it in quiet, small, little private conversations.
It's true.
It was my dorm, like my roommate in my dorms, you know, that sat me down and was like, Sam, no, like you were raped. Like, that's what happened. Like, what you're telling me is that. And if I didn't hold that small conversation where I was like, yeah, and then this kind of happened and then that, you know, and I walked myself through it also, I wouldn't have been able to identify it. And even that was 4 or 5 years ago. And I still am struggling to be like, nope, that's definitely what happened. You know, I'm definitely doing something about it. I think the idea that it is so crazy to talk about, like, it's such an ugly word to have in our mouths, right? Like rape, no one likes to say it. Get familiar with saying it, because we've had to get familiar with experiencing it and going through the harassment and going through the assaults. So it might not be a word in your vocabulary that you sit comfortably with, but you have to talk about it. You have to ask people. You have to call it what it is. You have to support them when they're trying to figure out what the hell happened to them too. So talk about it, and not in private, small, little, you know, quiet settings always. If that's the first step, take that first step. I needed to take that first step. But if you don't at least start there, it's just forever, you know, continuing the cycle of remaining silent. It's still going to happen. They're going to do it to somebody else, you know? And I've also said it before, like, we're not a profit out for prosecution. We're not a nonprofit out for prosecution. But with that, like, we are also tired of being polite, kind of thing. Like, I would much rather be loud and, you know, assertive and apologize after than continue, you know, jeopardizing my own, you know, sanity and everything else to appease you, to appease this one moment.
To tiptoe around so you don't feel uncomfortable. Well, what's uncomfortable is being raped.
Yeah.
That's really uncomfortable, right? And living with the trauma for the rest of your life. It's 30 some years later, right? And this still plays a major role in my life. And one of the things we posted about just recently was a girl who the entire course of her life changed as the result of her sexual assaults. So it's not just bad sex. It's not just a bad night out. That date didn't go well, right? These are traumatic experiences for the people that endure them and can have lasting effects for some people.
Exactly. And the fact that we may get shadow banned or that YouTube might channel my band this episode, or why, right? Like you said, we need to get uncomfortable with having the word rape in our mouth. Like, we have to say it, we have to be loud, and I support you both. Like, I feel like we have to talk about it. Like, this is not an isolated incident, unfortunately. Like, it happens so often, and it's like, why? We can't live like this, you know? We can't. We need to have a better future for our nieces or our future kids or whoever they may be, because again, if the school starts teaching these things, I feel like these little kids will be growing up, will grow up to be better people,
right?
You know, so thank you again for your sharing your story, sharing your project, your nonprofit. Any last minute things you want to say before I let you both go?
Thanks for listening to us, and thanks for helping spread the word. That's the biggest thing for us right now is if you can't afford merchandise or a donation, that's fine. Share it with your friends. Put the link out there.
Share the profile. If you know, say stories or put anything up in your Instagram, tag us, send it in a DM, you know, just make contact with us and, you know, just continue the conversation.
For sure, I will share all the things. I already shared the web's page and everything. So I'm very excited for you both to see what's coming in the future. And I hope to continue this going. And you're always welcome on my platform. And I hope to work together in the future. And thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great evening, a day, week, month, you know, and a new year and great stuff for you both. Thank you.
Thank you, Chibi.
Thank you.
You're welcome.